This is A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. Open, authentic, and engaging conversations about autism. Made for autistic people, parents, and carers of children on the autism spectrum. Welcome to A Different Brilliant.
Hello and welcome to A Different Brilliant. My name is Madeline Jane Lobsey and I am your host. I'm joined today in the studio by Dr. Fiona Aldridge, and Fiona is a clinical psychologist and manager of Aspect Assessments, which is what we're going to focus on today. Fiona's got a specific interest in developmental disability and the assessment of neurodevelopmental conditions. It's always funny when you talk about someone when they're right there. But she is very passionate about providing high quality assessments for autism of people of all ages to enable people that she supports, that you support, to understand themselves and their needs and access appropriate supports. Fiona's worked at Aspect for more than 15 years. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, lovely, it's really great to have you here. So, look, I think more than ever, there is a lot of conversation about autism, and there's a lot of conversation about supports, lack of supports, assessments, how people are being assessed, whether they should be assessed, the difference between an autism assessment and what is commonly talked about is a functional capacity assessment. And, you know, we will get into it, but for anybody that happens to have never heard of that, it's fundamentally an assessment to look at all of your capacities in life to deal with life in a really simplified way. So we're going to talk about that. And, you know, whilst we won't get into any real detail about the NDIS because things are changing and we don't know, we'll touch on some of that. So maybe if we just start with something really basic, like what is the difference between an autism assessment and what's now being spoken about more is a functional capacity assessment?
And I think that's such a good question, because I think you're so right. There's so much confusion out there about what's needed, when's it needed, when you might do one thing and when you might do something else. And I think at the fundamental or the most basic level, one way to think about it is that a diagnostic assessment is a really specific assessment that's looking at, does someone have autism in this case? So it's only asking that question and trying to gather a whole stack of information about that person at home, at school, in relationships, in different environments, to get a thorough picture, if you like, or an understanding of how that person works, what makes them tick, how they see the world, to then compare that to the diagnostic criteria and be able to say, yes, this person does have autism or not. So it often takes a long time and is really comprehensive, but is actually answering a really narrow question around why, how does this person work? What is their neurotype? Do they have autism? And in contrast to that, a functional capacity assessment is more saying, how does this person function in the world? How do they engage with the world? What can they do independently? What do they need support? And it's a much more global assessment, or a much more, a broader look at someone.
Yeah. So let me ask, because this is my viewpoint, but you might go, it's not right. Okay. Is, you know, because I've been through the whole assessment process and I've done it with three of my children as well. So I've got at least four experiences of doing it. Yep. So I would say that what you just called the diagnostic assessment, which is an assessment for autism, it's about view of the world, emotional experiences, relationships. There's many things that feel like it makes up that assessment, whereas I felt like the functional capacity assessment was much more like what you can do and not do, and very sort of practical action in the world, and less so about experience of life, experience of the environment, less so about that.
I think you're spot on. I think that's exactly what it is. And I think also it's a functional capacity assessment is a lot broader in the sense that it's not just looking at what can I do or not do because of autism, but what can I do or not do in general. And in
You might have a car accident and end up having a functional capacity assessment.
So it's not specific. Yeah. And you're right, it's around capacity, ability to do things, and but also across someone's life. So your functioning or your ability or your skills at home might be quite different to the workplace or at school. Yeah. So a good functional capacity assessment will take that into consideration and look, what supports do you need? Where are you struggling? What's easy? What's hard at school and at home and at grandma's or wherever else you might go?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think when you said a good functional capacity assessment, that it would do that, because if I look, I've had four different people do those assessments and, yeah, there's definitely a difference. So that thing like you might – one of my kids is fine when it's just us two at home, but you take them to a family event with even cousins they love and the capacity drops. So – and that's – I feel so important to be pointed to in assessments or looked at.
Well, I think in order to get the right supports for someone, you need to understand the differences in different settings and how capacity can change. It's not static. We don't always have the same capacity all the time.
Yeah, and I just thought too, it is a real journey, you know, to even be, like I say it very flippantly now because I'm so, I guess, used to it or I've processed a lot about it. But you're in a conversation about needing support and that's confronting sometimes. Nobody really likes needing any kind of support. Even that, I don't know, how do you deal with that when people are confronted by it?
Yeah, I think, again, it comes down to the skill of the assessor and being able to step through that and walk through it. And I think it's also being honest with people about what you're trying to achieve in the different assessments, and that the reason that you're doing a functional capacity assessment is around establishing someone's support levels, what they find hard, which is, it's never nice to talk about what you find difficult, but why that's important. And, you know, I think in a different way to a diagnostic or an autism assessment, a lot of functional capacity assessments is about trying to put supports in place, whether that be through different funding sources or accessing different services.
Yeah,
or
and even if you don't, like, access anything out of it. Like, I remember as you were talking, there was this moment when I personally had a functional capacity assessment where I went, oh, the person said something like, what would it be like for you if you didn't have to tolerate that, survive that, work so hard to do that, need extra time to do that? You know, whatever they said, what if you didn't need any of that? What would your life be like? And I just got such a shock. It was so sobering. I was like, wow, I am working so hard. Mm. And I also went, I am a legend that I've made it this far. Like, so whether I ever even got actual supports, which I did after that, even seeing that about myself was amazing.
So I think it can be validating for people sometimes to go through that process and go, okay, I have worked really hard and life has been tricky at times and there is stuff out there. We could do something to make this a bit different or to help.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm realizing in the conversation is none of the assessment is about assessing you, so to speak, like to give you a grade, you know, like I got this mark for my assessment, which is most people's relationships to assessment. But actually it's called that. But the only point of it is to be able to make sure you have the fullest, most brilliant, excellent life you could have and finding out whatever would be specific for you with that.
And so maybe it's more about understanding.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word, understanding you, yourself. Maybe understanding how you interact and relate with the world, understanding what supports are out there and what might benefit. So maybe understanding is a better word. I think also autism assessment is also very much about understanding. I think probably across the ages, but parents in particular can sometimes find it very confronting, this idea of labelling a child. So going for an autism assessment and being put a label. But again, I think that is, you know, knowledge is power in lots of ways, and that understanding helps us to understand. So that autism assessment gives us a clue maybe of why that person has the differences they do or the struggles that they do, as well as the strengths that come with it. But whereas the functional capacity assessment is telling us what the strengths and challenge, what the strengths and the challenges and the struggles are, the autism assessment is the explanation for that. So it's not telling us for that individual person whether they can make a cup of tea independently or whether they can go to work independently. That's what the functional capacity assessment does. But the autism assessment and subsequent diagnosis, if it's there, tells us why they're finding it hard, because their neurotype is different. I think one way to think about this is to step outside of the autism space and think about another context. So if someone is having difficulties, say, with their vision, say a child is sitting in the classroom and they can't see the board and that means it's impacting their work, that assessment of what's happening in the classroom, or they can't see, they're not performing in maths, they're not performing in English, they can't read, is like the functional capacity assessment. It's that in the real world, in the minute, what can they do, what can't they do?
There's a barrier to them fully being able to do this.
Correct. Yeah. So that's like the functional capacity assessment.
Yeah.
That child then goes to see an optometrist to have their eyes checked. And that's like the diagnostic or autism assessment. It's saying, why can't that child see? Oh, it's because when we do that vision assessment, they're short-sighted. And so they can't see. That's why they're not performing.
And the support is
to get the glasses that fix the problem.
This is so good, Fiona. Like, I can't tell you how many people ask me, should I get assessed or should I get my child assessed? Like, hundreds of times I've been asked that. And I have my own answer to that. I always say yes.
Yeah.
I have my own answer to that. But I think what you're saying really answers it, which is if you want understanding, if you personally want understanding, you want to understand yourself or you want to understand someone else, yes, 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 go get assessed.
And I think then the different types of assessment, like autism versus functional capacity, give you different bits of understanding, different information.
Yeah, and I think that is then the journey, right? So you get all the information and then people start saying, well, you could have this, you know, people start offering support and all of that's then a choice. You don't have to take every support on. You could, you know, like there's lots of choice after that.
So much choice, and it might change from time to time. It might be at one point in your life or your child's life that that support is really needed, but then your capacity, your bandwidth might shift and different supports might be needed. And that's where that understanding of an autism assessment is so helpful, because it gives you, if you like, that general operating model of how your brain works and how your brain thinks that you can then use to help guide things like accessing support. By knowing someone that someone has autism, we know from research and experience and from listening to people, autistic people, what works and what doesn't work so well. So it gives us a shortcut or a clue to say, well, maybe these supports would be helpful for you. Whereas if we know that someone has an ADHD diagnosis, maybe slightly different supports would work. So it helps you understand which specific supports.
Yeah. And I love what you said about operating. Like, it is like getting the operating system. Mm. And, you know, I was thinking about, if you ever watch someone try to put a cupboard together, a flat pack, right, where they won't use the instructions at all, and the suffering that goes with that, and sometimes they make it and then they've got to pull it apart, and, you know, there's a lot that happens. And then there's people that read the instructions and they get the operating manual, and look, you might still make errors, but you've got a way of handling the thing. And yeah. that was certainly my experience, particularly with my children, mm-hmm. about, oh, okay, that's how that one works.
Yeah, and I think it's that's where a really thorough autism assessment will look at all the different criteria, if you like, or characteristics that can make up autism and help you understand, oh, those challenges with sensory, that's not because I'm fussy or I'm picky. That's because I have autism and my brain works a bit differently and it is actually perceiving that sensation differently from someone else.
And I think people would find it's less medical than they imagine. So I think there's some view, like when you go to a doctor and get diagnosed with something, it's very symptoms and medical and, you know, whereas the autism diagnosis and assessment is, I don't know, more human, more about the whole of a person and the people around them.
Yeah, it's really about trying to understand that how that person sees and engages and interacts with the world. And I think it depends who makes the diagnosis and who you go to for assessment. Like in your experience, you've probably had a range of experiences, but often, at least if you see a psychologist, an assessment is quite lengthy for autism. It can take several hours and it's much more like having a chat and having a conversation and asking questions, and the person doing the assessment will listen and learn and ask specific questions to try to understand a bit more.
Yeah, so let's then look at misconceptions. So what are some of the misconceptions you've heard around the world of assessment?
Yeah, I think there's so much information out there about assessments, and I think I actually feel for people often, I think it can be really confusing and really challenging to know what you need when and what might be helpful when. And I think it can be hard, say, for families trying to navigate the education system and the NDIS and maybe even Centrelink and then what the speech pathologist is after. Like, there's so many different people who might need slightly different things. So I think one misconception that I think we've touched on a little bit is that one assessment can do everything. I think that's just not the case. We need to match the assessment with what question we're trying to answer. So if we're trying to say, what is that underlying explanation? What is their operating system? Then we're looking for that autism assessment. Whereas if we're asking the question around, how does this impact the person in their everyday life? What can they do independently? What do they need help with? That's when you're looking at the functional capacity assessment. Or if going even broader, if we're saying, what is this person's communication like? What maybe they need some alternate forms of communication, then we'd go to a speech pathologist. So I think the idea that one assessment can do everything is a bit of a misconception that can be out there. And I think also there can be confusion about what does what and also what you need for what purpose. And sometimes schools or the NDIS or other funding bodies might ask for multiple assessments. And that can be really tough on families because it's expensive and time-consuming and emotionally draining to go through.
It is all of those things, Fiona. It is all of those things. It's also, I was just thinking about the ADHD assessment in comparison to autism. And yeah, again, it's distinct. Like, it's I like the way you're saying it's answering a specific question. It's a good way to look at it rather than, oh, do I need another assessment. It's like, well, have we answered this question?
And what information do I need?
Yeah.
And have I done the right thing to get that answer?
Yeah. Yeah, very good. So then let's look at things. Firstly, I do think it's really important to say that, you know, people self-identify as neurodivergent. They say I'm autistic or they might use neurodivergent as an umbrella term for many things. And there's validity in that to self-assess. But I guess why would you get an assessment?
I think that's a really personal question in some ways for a lot of people. I think in some ways the answer is probably more obvious for children. So for kids who have to navigate a school system and that often isn't set up for different neurotypes, it's you know, the traditional education system is a very certain way and a certain structure that doesn't work for everyone's brain. So if you're trying to navigate that system, there are requirements and processes and paperwork and hoops really that to jump through to get that support, and you need that official, there's no way to escape it. You kind of need that official paperwork to get through it. So I think for kids, maybe it's clearer. It's to be able to access the right supports at the right time. I would argue that assessment is so much more than ticking boxes. The level of understanding you get is so much greater. But there
when you put it in that context of understanding, it's a very different way of looking at it. Like absolutely. The more understanding you can, I would always think, the more understanding you can have, the better.
Absolutely. And I think the more understanding, you know, then goes on to the teachers that are working with the child or the other therapists, the more information we can give. But there probably is also a level of ticker box to get that child into the right school or the right supports.
And then maybe as an adult, let's look, because, you know, that's more common as we expand our viewpoint absolutely. About what autism is. We notice far more people are being diagnosed, far more women and girls. And, you know, I would say that that understanding, I found the assessment process utterly nurturing.
Yeah, that's like so good.
Like someone was finally really interested in everything about my life and what I was dealing with, and relieved.
Yeah,
I'm going to say this in the most basic way, that I wasn't crazy.
Yeah,
there was a validity to the whole thing.
And I think for adults, that's often what other people would say. It's validating. It's not because they're failing at life, or they just haven't tried hard enough, or they haven't worked in a certain way. It's because their brain is a bit different and the world isn't necessarily set up for that. So they've faced barriers. I think it helps sometimes with self-advocacy, in the sense that others around the individual might not always accept self-identification as much as the autistic community does, and as much as it's a valid thing, that employer, if you're asking for some accommodations, may not. So it can be supportive and make people feel like it's a legitimate request, or it's got that a bit more authority maybe. And, you know, we would always say really the assessment is giving voice to that person's experiences anyway. So it is, yeah, self-identification is still very valid, but systems
don't. Someone says you're right.
I think it is that.
I really do think it's that.
And I think that gives you power, right? Yeah. It gives you confidence. Maybe that's what it is, confident to advocate for yourself. I think it can also, you touched on it earlier actually in your experience, give you that understanding about yourself, just putting it in a different perspective, hearing it said back to you, having it kind of discussed can give you that understanding.
Yeah, and that's not to diminish that there were like a grieving bit too, like or a regret, you know, as an adult when you do it, because you just go, all that stuff that I went through that I probably didn't need, well, maybe didn't need to, could have got support for. And I do think there's that to go through as well. Even with your children, there's the, you know, how did I miss this, or what am I going to need to do to get the world to be the way we want it now, or all of that.
I think adults in particular, probably in particular adult women, but maybe that's a bit of a generalisation, will often say exactly that, that it's, you know, I wish I'd known about this 10 years ago. I wish I'd had some help earlier. Maybe things could have been a bit different. And I think it's important to work through that, but then also to use that information to look forward. And now that I know this.
Yeah, good. Well, I can hear the listeners going, yeah, but what do I do? My teacher's saying, get this assessment, and someone, my friend's, you know, my kid's parent's friend, whatever, has said, I think your kid's autistic, and I don't know what, you know, like there's all these people talking and my mother's said to me, don't get your child assessed. You don't want to label them. So there's people listening now and someone's going, but you're going to need a functional capacity assessment because that's where the NDIS is aimed. Let's just calm everyone down and give them some pathways.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think you're right. I think it is that. And I think, you know, whether it's for yourself as an adult or a parent for your kids, we or for a friend or a sibling or whoever. We want the best for people, right? So I think there's always, you know, things come from the best place. Even that grandma saying, don't get your child assessed. It's because there's that fear of what that could happen or how that could impact this perfect little person and this perfect little human. But I think for anything, autism included, I would always say if there's a concern and if there's a worry, it's better to get it checked out and to get it looked at. And I think for really little people, there's a number of pathways. So if they're kind of under school age, there's the early childhood centres and the maternal health nurses that in New South Wales commonly do the Blue Book. So it might be through your local community. They're often a good place to have a first chat about child's development. That's what they look at. They look at milestones and language and things like that. And for people of all ages, your GP is probably a really good starting point. Just to say,
what do I do now?
What do I do?
Yeah, so let's say you go to a GP and they go, oh, I'm not really sure. Like, you know, yeah. What are some of the practical choices? Because you don't, there are many ways to get an assessment.
Absolutely.
So what are the options?
Yeah, then? So I think there are probably two main pathways really, maybe three, but the two main pathways are either to get referral to a medical specialist, so a paediatrician or a psychiatrist, either child or adult, depending on the age, and they will assess for autism as well as doing their kind of general screenings that they do. The other pathway is to ask for a referral to a psychologist, a clinical psychologist or a neuropsychologist who has a particular interest in this area and training and specialty in this area, and then they will do their assessment. For psychologists, you actually don't necessarily need a GP referral unless there are some circumstances where you may be eligible for a Medicare rebate. It's fairly limited, but then you would need a referral. But for a medical specialist, you would always need a referral from a GP to start. And the process is just a bit different. So speaking in generalizations, but an assessment by a psychologist will be a lot longer and will be over more sessions and will involve things like some questionnaires and.
Yeah, and I do think rather than saying longer, which it is, I would call it more in depth.
That's probably a better way to phrase it.
Yeah, because it's not just like, well, we're going to take longer to do it.
No.
It's the depth of what's being looked at.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think depth is a better way to put it. So typically with a psychologist, you might do some questionnaires about a whole range of things, but then the focus of the psychological assessment will be interacting one-on-one. And for autism, the psychologist might use the ADOS or the MIGDAS. These are different tools that can help
us. Which are questionnaires.
Oh, they're interactions. So they're questions. They vary with age. So for kids, they're a lot more play-based. Mm. For adults, it's more like having a chat and trying to get to know you and how you see the world. And they're very kind of relational and interactive. And then the psychologist would also do a more clinical interview to understand the history, if there's any medical problems, what else is going on for this person, to have that really thorough picture. And a paediatrician or a psychiatrist will do all of that clinical interviewing as well, and they will often do questionnaires, but the kind of structured observation and relational interaction component is usually short.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so then to bust the myth that we're all on the spectrum, which we're not, when you might not like bright light, but that doesn't mean you're autistic, right? There are things you might relate to, but you may not be autistic.
Absolutely.
So to bust the myth that we're all on the spectrum, which we're not, once you've done all of this assessment process, are you yes or no? Like, can you absolutely go, that person's autistic or not?
For autism assessments, generally, yes, that's what we're aiming to do. So the autism criteria that we use in Australia is the DSM-5 criteria, and it has 7 different symptom or criteria groups, categories, if you like, traits. And then it has rules around how many traits you need in what combination to have autism or not. So the aim of an autism assessment is to gather all that rich information to look at in that clinician's judgment. Does that person meet with differences in those areas? And then you kind of might say yes or no, or there's some but not enough for that clinical diagnosis.
Yeah, very good. And I think that's the thing I say to people is it's the cumulative nature of the whole of you
and that
makes it yes or no.
Yeah.
And you might have someone in your life that hates loud noise or doesn't like bright light or is rigid in the way they think, but that might just be the way they are. Mm. But it's the cumulative nature of the whole thing.
And I think coming back to this is all autism assessment that we're talking about, but coming back to when we were talking about autism assessment versus functional capacity assessment, another kind of way to think about it is a functional capacity assessment will tell you what's going on for that person at different times. So to use like your sensory examples around not liking loud noise or bright lights, a capacity assessment will tell us that bright lights means that person cannot focus as well or function as well, but it doesn't tell us why, whereas the autism assessment is saying the reason for that is the autism. Whereas you could do an assessment and say, actually, we've looked at that. Yes, this person is sensitive to loud noises. They like things to go a certain way. They don't cope well with transitions or change. But maybe when you look at the broader picture and step back from that and that whole person, maybe anxiety is what's happening for that person, because in anxiety, they may not have the social differences that we would expect in autism, but they may still have in that area of functioning some differences.
Very good. So all of the point of this is to get into the nitty-gritty detail of a human being's life, to understand ourselves fully, understand others, and then go, hey, of all the supports we could possibly have, what are the ones that will actually do something
the
and
right
make a difference?
The right support for the right person at the right time is what we're trying to do.
Okay, so in a world of Googling, you're finding an assessment and going to the GP and all of that and trying to work out what to do. Yeah. How does someone even tell what a good assessment is or what's not a good assessment?
Yeah, that's kind of the multi-million dollar question, isn't it? And I think I will get to that in 1 second, but I think in terms of the functional capacity assessment, if you were looking for that, typically they're done by occupational therapists.
Yes.
So whereas the paediatrician and the psychologist is more your autism assessment. Yes. But in terms of what makes a good assessment, gosh, that's a really tricky question to answer. But I think what we're looking for is, firstly, we want someone who has experience in this area and who has upskilled in this space. It's not something, at least in psychology, that is covered in depth in training. Mm. It is something that people need to invest in afterwards if that's their passion to assess in this area. And I think you're looking for that thoroughness or that comprehensiveness we were talking about a minute ago. So as we were saying, autism is that pattern or that accumulation, that combination of everything in that person's life. That takes time to get that. So it is about an assessment that is long, not so long it burdens people, but long enough to get all that information. And a lot of psychologists at least will use some assessment tools to support that. So people have had training in those tools is really important. So I think you're looking for kind of qualifications and experience, but you're also looking for a thoroughness and someone who takes the time, I think, to understand and is curious about why you're there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of saying it. You know, when someone's curious about another human being, they start with the platform that this person's amazing and perfect and let's go find out.
Yeah.
When there's a lack of curiosity, it's often like let's just find out what the problem is and move on. Mm. Like it's a deficit-based, problem-based looking. And I think most websites for psychologists, etc., will have some language on there. If it says nothing about autism, that's a no-go. That person has not gone and done the in-depth looking and study for that. But if it had kind of problem deficit language, I would say that's a bit of a no-go. And if it speaks about experience in a positive way, that might be a good way to start. And then get on the phone and talk to the receptionist, at least.
Asking them about it, and it's tricky. And I get it comes a bit back to needs. Like, different people, have autistic or not, have different ways of communicating and interacting, and none of us get on with everyone all the time. So as well as having those qualifications and skills, it needs to be someone that you can connect
with. That's so good. I was just thinking about when the guy that did my son's assessment, I was like, I could not sit in a room with you. Like, this guy was not my person.
Yeah.
You know? But my son loved it. Yeah. Right? And there is that thing of, there's like a click that, okay, this person I can be enough of myself with to have this really in-depth conversation.
And I think, you know, most good psychologists' experience in this area can make people feel at ease and can work with them. But I think, I think the deficit-based nature is a really tricky one in the assessment space, because I think, like, that is not how I see autism. Mm. That is not how I view autism. But yet sometimes to get people the best supports and to get them the right support and the right help, we need to use some deficit-based language.
Yeah, I think that's important. I remember them saying to me, but what's it like on a really bad day or a bad moment? Yeah. And it made me go, not every day is like that for me. And but there are those moments, and maybe I wouldn't get to those moments with some support. And, you know, maybe it would, or it, I could be supported in those moments. So I think it's also important to say, don't shy away from saying when it's really hard, because sometimes it is.
And that's it. I think, you know, being affirming is not the same as always being positive, right? No. So I think people sometimes confuse that to be affirming, everything has to be all just, this is great and this is wonderful, when it's not always.
It's not.
So a good assessment will capture both the strengths and the weaknesses and will flesh that out a little bit.
Okay, so as we navigate who knows what going into the future, what we will always know is that there are autistic human beings in the world, and that when we have assessments, we can be holistic and comprehensive assessments, we can be supported in the way we need. So regardless of what happens, what's the final thing you'd want to say to parents or carers or people who are looking for themselves about assessment?
Such a good question again, but I would say that assessment is so much more than just a test or a checklist or a ticker box, that it's about that understanding, and that understanding can give such a richness. It can help people with self-acceptance. It can help others accept someone around. There's nothing, I find it so incredibly, I'm not sure if the right word, amazing maybe, when you're working with a family and maybe a parent who's been really frustrated by their children's behaviour can suddenly make sense that, oh, that's because their sensory system is wired up really differently, and actually that noise, which does, I don't barely notice, hurts their ears. Mm. And that helps that family accept and understand. It helps that child be appropriately supported. So I think it can offer such rich knowledge. And I think for me, so much of it is that it's about getting the right supports for that person, which might be different from another person, at the right time.
Well said. Well, we'll make sure people can also find you and the assessment team at Aspect, because that is absolutely one of the services that happens there. But thank you for your passion for this and all of the years you've continued to learn and study and study, because I can tell you on the other end of it, there is nothing better than having a Fiona on the other side do that assessment. So thank you, and thanks for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. Lovely to chat.
Thanks for listening to A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests and aspirations of the autistic community. If you would like to learn more, visit our website, aspect.org.au, to listen to past episodes or send us a message. Make sure to like or subscribe to A Different Brilliant on your podcast app.